Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the midpoint stripe.
Ford sends it to Curry. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
Hey, everybody. Quick note before the pod starts. We talk about Andre Drummond for a little bit in this pod, and I swear to God, the Knicks signed him 2 minutes after we hit stop on the recording. So bear with us on that part that dropped right after we recorded this, but enjoy the pod.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And tonight, we've got our first Lakers Summer League game. You can catch that on Amazon Prime or ESPNU. We are also going to talk a little bit of Jonathan Kuminga. We didn't get to that yesterday, so want to get D's thoughts on him. But first, we have a trade. The Lakers trade DeAndre Ayton to the Washington Wizards for Jaden Hardy and 2 future second-round picks. D, what's your reaction to Rob finally getting AD, his center?
Oh, man, that was a funny text. I was wondering what was going to happen with Ayton. After Jackson signed with Utah, I was sort of just like, looks like they're maybe just going to go with Ayton as the backup big. And with all the flurry of signings and stuff and us sort of holding off on like bigger picture roster conversations until we feel like the roster is more set, one of the things that was in my little book that these are things we need to discuss is, hey, what's it going to be like with DeAndre Ayton as the backup after starting all season? Sounds like that was going to be a concern for the front office and maybe the coaching staff as well. I can only assume that that was on their minds and that's not going to be a concern anymore. And the Lakers are now in the market for a backup center. And I think that this was a multi-pronged trade, Pete. The first part is what we just discussed. Ayton's not really our center of the future as a starter. We don't know how maybe locked in he will be as the primary backup to Walker Kessler. And so that's one thing to consider. That's one of the prongs. I think the other prong was, is Ayton viewed as a positive asset in this regard? And he is. The Lakers didn't give anything to get off of Ayton's deal. They got draft capital back. And for a team that just traded 2 first-round picks for Walker Kessler and traded its only 2 swaps as well, and didn't have much draft capital left at all. And the only tradable draft pick they had was like a 2033 second round pick, I believe. This helps give them some draft capital if they want to go into the marketplace now or in a different transaction cycle. And so I think that was prong number two. Prong number three to me, Pete, is this trade saves them about $2.1 million. And for a team that is still out there in the marketplace, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later when we get to Jonathan Kuminga, I think every dollar that the team can save right now in the possibility of opening up a little bit of cap space to go out into the marketplace and maybe find another forward that could potentially start for them, I think that's critical. Those were the three ideas that I think the Lakers wanted to accomplish if they were going to trade Ayton, and they did all three. And so to me, this is a good move for the team, even though now their front court depth is diminished. And I was sort of like, hey, Ayton's a really good player. If he's your backup on an $8 million deal, that sounds good to me, but not anymore. Looks like they're probably going to go into the minimum market and see if they could find a big that way.
Yeah, certainly creates another hole on the team. I was skeptical of Ayton's willingness to commit to being a backup, and I think that this probably speaks to the Lakers' perspective on that as well. I also think that this is a precursor move. Hardy, I think, would be a poor use of the $6 million that he's owed. With the addition of Sexton and Grimes, there's just no need for another guy of that ilk that makes any more than a minimum, if at all. And so that said, he's still able to be aggregated with other salary in another move if necessary. So the 2 second round picks, is because the Lakers will be operating as an under the cap team, you can aggregate him. And so the 2 second round picks are what's valuable in that to me, and what they do with Hardy. If they keep Hardy, again, I think that's poor usage of that, but I suspect that he'd be moved along with that. And it gives, again, the Lakers some draft capital to be able to make some of the moves that I think they're going to need to be able to make. So we will see. Some of the bigs that were brought up, I'm curious your thoughts on them in the initial Shams tweet. Who knows which direction the Lakers go in? It was Andre Drummond, Jonas Valanciunas, and Kevon Looney. What do you think of those three names as potential backups?
Of those names, Pete, Drummond sounds to me like the best option there. He's the best rebounder. He is, you know, someone who's, I think, played more and better in a playoff environment instead of Valanciunas. If I had trust that Looney was capable in this regard, I would want him from an experience. I've played in the highest level games imaginable. I just don't think Looney has it anymore.
Yeah, I think he's done. Yeah.
From a legs perspective. And so if those are my options, I would say let's go with Andre Drummond. I'm not a big Valanciunas fan at all, honestly. And I get that he was behind Jokic, and there's not many minutes to be had behind Jokic in a Denver playoff rotation. But I also think that Denver decided essentially, no, we'd rather play Aaron Gordon at center and play smaller. And that was without Peyton Watson available to them as a solution. And so I don't think Valanciunas has it either, honestly, in terms of a playoff pedigree within this idea. So if those are the only names, I kind of hope those aren't the only names,
exactly.
But that's sort of where I am too.
Yeah, Drummond to me is the only acceptable name of the three. And I agree with you on Looney. I just think he's physically done. What stood out to me more than the individual names was collectively, those are all just massive, strong human beings that it sort of replicates what you have in the starting spot at the five and Kessler. And that's, I think, is possibly a thing that they're going for, even at the one spot with Austin and Sexton. Sexton is a speed attack off the dribble type of player, similar to Austin, that Gabe and Kennard were Austin's backups last year. It's kind of odd to put a system together when the backup of your starter plays a pretty different game than your starter does. So I'm wondering if they're looking for some degree of continuity there, but none of those names are particularly inspiring. I think Drummond's better than people give him credit for, and he's the only one of those three that can move his feet at all, which is why he can, I think, play some backup minutes in a series. But I think any of them would be a downgrade from Jackson last year. I don't think Jackson was retainable in the whole sequence of events of signing the other players as well. But yeah, I do think he's a better player than any of those names mentioned.
I think if Jackson was willing to play for the minimum, then he would have been on the table for the Lakers. But he got more than the minimum to play for the Jazz. And he didn't play on the minimum this past season for the Lakers either. He got a slight raise from his minimum salary 2 seasons ago. And so I would have loved to have kept Jackson too, but it looks like in the idea of what the Lakers are trying to do, it's just like, we've got a $30+ million starting center. We're not going to put another $6, $8, $10 million,
right,
particularly when Mamu is a guy who can help facilitate two big lineups. And I don't really trust him defensively as the lone big on the court, but he did play backup center for Toronto. And so in theory, there are going to be stretches where the Lakers do play small ball, and technically he would be the center in those groupings. And so I think that that also cuts down the idea of just like, okay, well, we need a high minutes backup center in this regard. Although I'm interested in this idea generally, Pete, Kessler's not been a guy who's been like a 30 plus minute player in his career. Mm. He's more been in the 25 to 28 minute range. And so you do still need to cobble together some backup center minutes here, and they're not all going to go to Mamu. So it's one of the reasons why a name like Drummond is there for me. Let's take a quick break here, Pete. And when we come back, there's another name that I'd like to mention, and then we can move on from this center discussion. In looking at the available free agents list, Pete, it's kind of grim when it comes to center. But one of the names that is out there is Nick Richards. And I just wanted to get a quick thought from you on Richards. He's a different type of big from Kessler. He's a little bit smaller, a little bit more mobile, but played center, has started games at center, has been a backup center in the league, fairly athletic, lob threat, knows his way around. What would you think of him if he were able to sign for the minimum? And would you have him higher than Drummond?
I wouldn't have him higher than Drummond. And the reason for that is his size. I think of this in context with Mamu and what he brings to the table. So I do agree with the approach of a more, and Drummond's not a defensive stalwart by any means, but he's a legit, he's a huge guy and he's great on the boards and he will, not get pushed around. He's a legitimate five in ways that I just think Richards is too small defensively. Like the reason why he's out there, despite being a lob threat, he's pretty good on the boards himself. He's not Drummond, but he's a good rebounder. But it's because he's small and he's fairly easy to score on in that spot that just both of our backup fives. And again, Mamu being described as a five, he's a small ball five, right? He's a five in the way that Naz Reid is a five. And he will play some of those minutes, but I don't think that both of our backups can be defensive liabilities in the way that I believe Richards is. Do you have a different point of view on him?
No, I don't. He's a different style of player, and in the vein of the tool for every job idea, having an alternative player like Richards is intriguing in that way. Runs the floor well, a bit more of a bouncy player, sort of ups the quickness quotient for the team, which I think after Jackson being gone would be helpful in this regard, right? Drummond has added a bit of a three-point shot. He shot them in Philly last year, mostly from the corner and not above the break. It's not a lot of options here. And so I'm also interested to see if the Lakers might end up trading for a backup who's on a smaller contract, if that's a possibility. So we'll see, but it's a need that didn't exist before. So I'm very interested to see what direction they go. Another need that has been there for a while, Pete, is still power forward. And I know that there's a player you wanted to talk about, so let's get to it.
Yeah, let's get to Jonathan Kuminga. And as NBA fans, we've all watched him, but you've watched him a little bit more as, you know, a split Lakers-Warriors household living up in the Bay. And normally on new players like this, I sort of leave things open to you rather than lead you with a question. But I'm going to lead you here. Why did Steve Kerr not like Jonathan Kuminga? And why do a not insignificant number of NBA people sort of scoff at Kuminga? He's, you know, 23 years old, will be 24 at the start of this season. Uber athlete and everything that goes along with that, can put the ball in the hoop a bit, but certainly draws a level of skepticism from a decent number of people, including his longtime head coach. So what was the story behind that by your view?
For me, Pete, I think it's a little bit of two things, but more of one than the other. So I'll start with the one that's a little bit less, because I think that this is the thing that carries over across multiple people rather than just Steve Kerr. I would say that the perception of Kuminga is someone who is sort of wanting to play on an island. And so he fashions himself as isolation scorer. He's not going to be a guy who moves the ball quickly. And a lot of ways, it would remind me of, honestly, Rui in the way that he played with the Wizards, which was like, let me catch the ball, let me survey, let me then use my athleticism and physical tools in order to try to get to a spot on the court where I could succeed. And that's totally fine if you could do it efficiently enough, and that you still sort of find your way back to team basketball now and then. And to be fair to Kuminga, I think that that oscillated with him and that there were times where he totally looked like he was buying in to what the Warriors wanted to do. I will say, and I think this idea also carries over and is more than just Steve Kerr here. But that idea that I just mentioned is not how Steve Kerr wants to play. He may make exceptions for that with a player like Kevin Durant or even Steph Curry, I guess, if you're going to go out there and dance. But for the most part, Kerr wants to run a system. He wants you to make quick decisions. He wants you to move off the ball. He wants you to make the extra pass. And he wants it to sort of be boom, 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 boom. And that's how he wants teams to play. I think Kerr probably would have been accepting of some of Kuminga's habits as an offensive player if the rest of his game was more attuned to winning. You got to lock in defensively all of the time. You've got to make the extra rotation. You've got to hit the glass a little bit more. You've got to sort of be a player that if you want the freedom offensively to do the stuff that you want to do, then you've got to show me that you're going to be disciplined and locked in all of these other facets of the game, because this is how you're going to be a winning player for us. And I think that Kuminga would do that sometimes, but he wouldn't do it all of the time. And you're a former coach. I know not at the NBA level, but coaching's the same at every level. The guys who show you they can do something and then they don't do it consistently, those are probably more maddening to a coach than the guys who kind of never are able to show you the things that you want them to be able to do. But the things that they can do, they do them consistently over and over and over again, because that makes them predictable as players and you can account for them.
Such an important word, predictability from your role players of, I know exactly what you're going to bring to the table on a night-to-night basis. And that allows me to work around it in ways that if you bring it one night and I'm expecting you to bring it the next night and you don't, it sort of makes the rest of the plan fall apart. So I do get that. I also think that coaches can get too cute by half on this and outthink themselves. And there were so many times where I was watching the Warriors, I'm like, you do not have enough talent on the floor right now. And you've got Jonathan Kuminga sitting on the bench. And that defensive capability, like, that's one of the arguments for him, frankly, for me with the Lakers, is that I do think he'd be an upgrade over Rui in that respect. Rui's gotten better over the years and has a level of versatility, but I think Kuminga brings that with an extra degree of athleticism as well. That, and even his analytics from this past year, he ranked pretty well in several defensive metrics, that he's 23 years old, again, going to be 24 at the start of this season, that you combine that with the fact that he is a great transition threat, which we were not a good transition scoring team, and we lost our best player at that in LeBron, and one of the best players in the league at that, that I think he'd help us get some really easy buckets in transition. He's got that scoring ability, that finishing ability around the rim. I think it adds to a, between him and Grimes and Sexton, those are all three guys that can really get to the basket, and even those guards can dunk on you from time to time if, you know, they get a runway, that I see it with him, and he reminds me a little bit of Sexton in that idea of he can drive people crazy, but I think that people can take that too far where they act like they're a vet minimum type of player or that they just stink overall. And it's like, oh, well, I don't like Colin Sexton at like 18, 19 million, but if he's your backup point guard, like that's a pretty good backup point guard. That I kind of feel that way about Kuminga, and he's still so young that, and you put a guy like that next to a Luka, that not every player is meant for Kerr's system. They actually play basketball quite differently than most teams do, and that's not for every player. I think Kuminga alongside a guy like Luka and a guy like Austin, I think that could be a peanut butter and jelly fit. So I don't know, I see it with him.
He's just such a good athlete, Pete, and the strengths that he has as a guy who can get downhill and play with athletic force. And even if he's not finishing all of the time around the basket, the sort of idea of coming at you at waves with bigger, stronger, faster players, the Lakers have lost some of that over the years, both with trading AD for Luka, and Luka's a totally different type of player, right? But they lost some of that with AD as LeBron went from 37, 38 to 39, 40, and 41. You lose some of that with LeBron too. And he was still very good at that as well, but it's not quite the same as it was when you go back and watch tape of him from 5 years ago versus to what it was this past season. And nor should it be. Having a player like Kessler, who is a wonderful offensive rebounder and a guy who is going to live in and around the paint a bunch. And having even a player like Mamu or Sexton, Austin, Luka, being able to create opportunities in and around the paint, having another player like Kuminga who can do the same, you start to stack your strengths. One of the things that I appreciate with Kuminga is that the Lakers have done something interesting. In losing Marcus, they have swapped out some of their less consistent offensive play for a player like Quentin Grimes. This happened too, going back to Gabe Vincent as well. The transition from like, okay, well, we've got guys who are not as good as finishers from wherever it is you position them to be finishers, to guys like Kennard even, and then now to a player like Sexton and a player like Grimes, who are going to pay off more of those plays than the Lakers traditionally have over the last 18 months or so, that you can then easily say, okay, well, we talked about Rui a bunch the last pod and sort of having him and Grimes as these satellite players. But if you sort of look at Kuminga as a smart replacement in that, no, this guy's not necessarily an outside shooter, but he's a guy who's going to operate on different parts of the court. And Grimes is more of a replacement for Rui, who can operate out of the corner, who can play out of the slot and shoot above the break, who is going to attack closeouts. Then I start to see a balanced group, but from different positions, right? Where now your forward is the driver and the more interior player, like sort of Marcus was, where he would post up more and maybe be in and around the paint a little bit. And Grimes is the guy who replaces Rui functionally within your offense. And so I see there being fit there as well. It's more to me, it's just like, okay, well, again, like, how reliable are you? Mm-hmm. And for some players, it clicks. And it's just like, man, this is my third team in 5 seasons. And am I going to be out of the league if it doesn't work this way? And other guys, it doesn't click. And they're just like, man, I'm Cam Reddish and now I'm playing in Turkey or whatever, and like I'm trying to make my way back to the league, but you find your way out of it, right? And so I don't know which one Kuminga's going to be, but at the right salary slot, I'm more than happy to take a gamble on this dude. He's certainly talented enough for it.
Let's go to break here. I want to talk a little bit about that salary slot and the creation of it, and then talk a little bit of summer league.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
So, Dee, one of the arguments behind waiting until this summer to do everything is where we find ourselves right now after using the available salary cap space, but still having some flexibility to do some things. The simplest way that I could put this is that if you waited until next summer to stretch and or to waive and stretch Vando, you wouldn't get any benefit from it because Austin's salary is going to kick in. Lakers are going to be above the salary cap to a point where there's no benefit. You do that now, or whether it's a trade or whatever it is, you actually create space to get some of the solid players that are left over, with the starting four spot being obviously the most open spot of it. So you had an idea yesterday regarding Cam Johnson. We don't necessarily have to talk specific players here, but I want to talk a little bit about some of the machinations of what the Lakers can get to in terms of open space, and whether it's they can spend all that money on one player or on two different players to fill important spots. Just what can the Lakers do right now to create space?
Well, we laid out the cap space plan when we were talking about Rui a little bit, right? Which is finding ways to save money in trades. I was talking at that point, trading Dalton into someone's cap space or trade exception, potentially trading Bronny into someone's cap space or trade exception. And suddenly that shaves $6 million. Off of your payroll almost instantly, right? And then if you stretch and weigh Vando, you can create another $7 million in cap space. And suddenly you're at $13 million of cap space without doing anything besides waiving Vando and making a couple of trades. This is what I was talking about at the top with Ayton. They've traded Ayton and they've already saved $2 million. Now, if you were to trade Dalton into cap space and stretch and wave Vando, you're at $13 million in cap space, 13.2, 13.3. And like we were talking about yesterday, that's about $1.5 million or so less than the mid-level exception. And to me, that's a viable contract to go out into the free agent marketplace and say, do you want this money from us?
And that's the significance of making this DA trade in terms of saving that space. And also, again, you can aggregate Hardy. So you can throw that into there. Lakers can get up to actually the 20-ish million with Bronny. I expect Bronny to either end up on whatever team LeBron ends up on or somewhere else. But Lakers can move all of that salary, even up into and including Jake. If you did all of those guys, we're at what, 25, 26 million dollars of cap space left over? And guys like both Kuminga and Rui, they're going to have some level of competition over them. So the Lakers are going to have to get to a certain salary slot to just be in the mix. Like, yes, they can offer the opportunity, but I don't think you're going to get either of those guys on a minimum or even like a taxpayer MLE that's what, like $5, $6 million type of thing. That sort of thing. Like, Lakers are, I believe, opening up space to sort of acquire this type of player.
It's one thing to talk about a cap space plan and like, okay, trade these guys into someone else's space and create cap space that way. It's another thing to basically just say, okay, well, the Lakers just made a trade. They got 2 second-round draft picks back. They also have a future second-round draft pick that they already had, and they've got a first-round swap. These are the last of their tradable sort of draft assets. The Lakers now with Vando, Dalton, Jake, Bronny, and Hardy, all of their salaries combined to be almost $25 million, right? $24.9 million. If you aggregate all of those salaries in a single trade, you could take back in up to $38 million in salary.
Really? Jeez.
Yeah, because of the cap rules and how you can take back money that's over, right? And as a cap space team, it wouldn't matter. The Lakers could actually do this after they've even signed Austin, essentially, right? So this to me is where it puts players back into the mix that as trade targets for at the very beginning of the Lakers offseason, Pete, we were just like, okay, well, who are the teams that need to get off of salary, right? We talked about Denver. We talked about like Cleveland potentially, and there were several other teams that we talked about, right? We even talked about OKC, and OKC picked up Dort's option and they renegotiated Hartenstein. They just signed Kenrich Williams. They're still over the second apron. Are they going to be a second apron team? They might be, but that doesn't sound like Presti to say like, oh, we're going to limit our options so fully. And Denver projects to be a second apron team too. I think they're already over the second apron and they haven't even signed Peyton Watson yet or Spencer Jones, who are both restricted free agents. There are guys who potentially are going to end up being traded this summer and it just hasn't happened yet. It's July 3rd.
Yes.
It's not like we're in August already, Pete. There's lots of free agency periods still to happen, and there will be more trades that are going to be made by other teams. Can the Lakers jump in the mix with some of these guys?
How would we be beneficial to them, though, if we're sending them salary in return, whether it be Vando, Jake, Hardy, etc.?
This is where the Lakers would want to operate as the third team or potentially come in after the fact that these guys are traded and basically be like, look, will you take back less salary and we'll give you the last of our draft capital, right? And so let's say Denver or OKC is just like, yeah, you want Cam Johnson? You want Lu Dort? Sorry, Lakers, we're not making a three-way trade with you involved. If they trade those guys to Charlotte or they trade those guys to Brooklyn or they trade those guys to other teams that are just like, okay, these are nice players. Maybe they'll help us. Maybe they won't. But does someone else want them? The Lakers might be able to say like, look, I can send you $18 million of salary and take back all of Cam Johnson's money and I'll give you 3 second round picks for that exchange. Do you want Vando and Hardy and Dalton, and 3 second round picks, and we get Cam Johnson? Those are the sorts of discussions I would expect the Lakers to try to loot themselves in to, Pete, because when it comes right down to it, they have the ability to go out into the trade marketplace and say, we'll happily take back more money than what we send out. and we'll even send you draft compensation to take on Vando's contract or whatever. Or they have the ability to try to say, take Vando into your cap space and we open up salary cap space this way. And then you don't even have to stretch and waive him. How much will it cost to get off of Vando's deal? 2 second-round picks? Well, we just traded for 2 second-round picks. Do you want those? Mm-hmm. And now they've got $14 million of cap space, which is basically the MLE, out of nowhere. They saved $2 million from the Ayton trade, and now they've just traded Vando.
Yep.
In this hypothetical.
Yep. There's several different ways they can go about this. And I think that's what's happening right now, is they're exploring the different options and the different ways of being efficient. And then also targeting the players that you want and understanding what their market is and what you'll need to pay them in order to get them. So should be fun. The story is certainly not over. We got, again, our first Summer League game tonight. Very excited about this. One player who will not be getting traded is Cameron Carr, because he signed his rookie contract yesterday and he'll be ready to go tonight, and along with Adu. And one of the things I noticed with the Summer League squad, guys like McRae, there was a very much a tilt toward athleticism. There are several guys on this team that are just bonkers athletes that I really hope they were able to pick up a guard that likes to pass the ball, but they should be fun out in transition if they can create some turnovers. Got the big kid, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Robbie Avila at the 5 spot. Not one of the athletes that I'm talking about, but a fun player nonetheless. Again, got to be on Amazon Prime and ESPNU if you're looking where to find that tonight. Just broadly speaking, D, what hopes do you have out of these Summer League?
I'm mostly looking at Carr and Adu, honestly, because they're the guys who we know for sure are going to be on the roster. I know that they've got some other like athletic forwards and guys who can really get after it. Mannion. So I think for me, for all the talk about like, oh, they'll be fun and let them get out there and run, I'd love to see what they do in order to create transition chances. And so for me, that's like, get out there and lock in defensively and get after it. When I listened to Carr talk, he was just like, look, man, like I'm trying to make a case for being the best defensive player on the team. Right. And he knows that in order to play, he's going to have to play some defense. And so, oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, go out there and guard.
Yeah.
If I'm a do, go out there and get in your stance, man, and lock in and guard.
Mannion. Yep.
I want to see it with those two guys plus Mannion. Go out there and get some steals, get some blocks, and then get out there and transition and try to create a damn highlight reel. Like, I want to see 10 dunks tonight, but I want to see them off of 8 steals and 3 blocks. You know what I mean? Like, let's make it happen.
And one of those guys that might get that block is William Kyle III, big man out of Syracuse. I think he's the best defensive big they've got on the team. And he's only 6'9", but with a 7'3 wingspan, blocked 2.5 shots a game last year in college, along with a steal. And so they've got quite a bit of defensive talent on this team. They just have like one guard that can kind of set up the offense and run things and all that in the half court. I think this has opportunity to be pretty fun. If any big Lakers news breaks over the course of this weekend, our next opportunity to record will be Sunday afternoon. So late Sunday afternoon or Sunday night, we'd have a pod out. If not, then we will be back on Monday. Everybody have a great 4th of July. Until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a 3-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5.
Bryant.
Yes.
And then with a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.